Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We are back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the Theater Arts and Culture Podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company. I'm Kevin Couchman. We have a very exciting episode for you. I'm going solo today, but I got two guests. I'm outnumbered. I'm surrounded. I'd love for you both to introduce yourself. Maybe we'll start with Allison. Allison, you're with the Minnesota Opera, correct?
That is correct. My name is, Dr. Allison Lewis. I'm new to Minnesota. I am currently the Civic Engagement Audience Development Manager at Minnesota Opera, and I'm very, very excited to be here.
Love Minnesota Opera, a great Minnesota institution. And the person who sort of prompted this, the person I was introduced to, is the founder of Mind's Eye Comics, and his name is Eric Childs. Eric, welcome to Mouthing Off. You are always welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm looking forward to our conversation, getting to know you, learning about Mind's Eye Comics, and then also learning about the many deaths. I nearly said the many lives. The many deaths. That's more dramatic, I think.
Right.
And is it Layla? Layla Starr. But in any event, Eric, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here and talk about Mind's Eye Comics and the many deaths of Layla Starr and all kinds of connections between all of that and why it's important.
I love connections. I'm a big fan of connections, human connections. Old-timey radio. Maybe you're listening to this on 94.1 Frogtown Radio. Maybe you're listening to this as a podcast. In any event, we love talking to guests. If you've got something going on, reach out to us at badmouthtc@gmail.com, and we are at badmouthtc.com. But let's get into it. Right away, I just want to say the many deaths of Layla Starr has a gala performance on Halloween, October 31st at 7:30 p.m., and it is running through November 8th, and that is a matinee. We'll come back around to it, but I always like to get the plugs in right away, and that is at mnopera.org, and then Mind's Eye Comics. Where can people find that, Eric, and what is Mind's Eye Comics?
So Mind's Eye Comics recently relocated to the St. Anthony Park neighborhood of St. Paul in the Shire. I'm just kidding. It's a European looking like chalet area called Milton Square. It was built in 1910. It's a serendipitous story I have to share really quickly. The founder of this location was a literacy advocate and a butcher. So it was originally a butcher store location. Here was the primary location. It was always designed to be a mixed use complex. So it was always designed to be like, I guess, an early mall of shopping as well as living. And that person actually set up one of the first lending libraries. And then their business actually did really well, and they went on to found the library, which is right across the street from us here.
And a beautiful
this
library.
This location actually found, right, it is very beautiful. And then this location actually found me. I was looking for another spot to, I was looking to leave South Metro and move into the Twin Cities, which I have a personal bias. I prefer St. Paul,
Whoop, whoop.
being originally from Kansas City. From Kansas City, Missouri, which is also a river town. St. Paul always just feels like home. But anyway, the property managers that were showing me the spot that I was looking at, they asked me, after the fact, I didn't want to move forward with the other location. They said, "Would you be interested in checking out this other spot that we think would be a perfect fit?" And they were correct. I love this location. It's a perfect home for the store. You can actually see some of it behind me right now. That's a huge
Yeah,
shop.
in the theater of the
Yeah.
mind, there he's got a whole comic book store right behind him. I love Prospect Park. I think it's just one of these wonderful little hidden enclaves. It's right near the St. Paul campus. I was just over at the Bell Museum with my family, which is not very far from there. It's a great little neighborhood, a real walkable neighborhood. The library is outstanding. You got the little grocery store there. Is this Thai place still down there?
It's still there, Lana Tai.
Amazing. I love that Thai place. Just outstanding. How long have you been in that location now, Eric?
I've been in this location now since December.
Okay. Oh, so
So
you
working on a year.
Okay,
I
that's a
still
great
haven't announced the full grand open yet.
Oh, okay. Well, would it put you out if I stopped by?
It would
I
not.
would love to
Love it.
stop by.
Stop by.
Yeah, I love. I mean,
Yeah.
I have my own love for comics. I will get into yours, but maybe we'll get Dr. Lewis's voice in here. Allison, can you maybe start out by telling us about what's going on right now at the Minnesota Opera? And we'll come back around. We'll cycle back around. What's going on with the season? What's going on now? What's next? And then let's get into this show and this collaboration. The many deaths of Layla Starr. So what's up at the opera?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're on. So we're basically just preparing for this upcoming season, which is, like you said, starting on October 31st with The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, which is an opera based on a graphic novel, which is why Eric and I sort of got connected. So we're doing some community engagement around this piece. So that's very exciting. Our winter opera is going to be Handel's Ariodante. And then our spring opera is going to be Verdi's Falstaff. But we actually are also doing a reprise of last year's premiere of My Name is Florence, which is an opera by a Black composer, B.E. Boykin, who is incredible. And this time, where it's a one night only performance in January. So if you missed it last year, this is the time to go. It's going to be in a concert, the it's going to be in the concert hall at the Ordway rather than the main hall, so that we can record it and then actually hopefully send it to the Grammys and see how it does.
Oh,
So
right. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. It'd be great to win a Grammy. How long have you been with the opera in this role, and where did you come from prior? And I'd also love to hear about your doctorate, what you focused on, where you studied, all that stuff. I think is fascinating. And then we'll come back to Eric.
yeah, absolutely. So I just moved here in the beginning of November. I guess I technically moved here the week of Halloween last year, so right before the winter. And yeah, I just finished my PhD in American Studies from the University of Kansas. So both Eric and I are from the Kansas, Missouri space. We're rivals technically, though. So yeah, my undergrad is in vocal performance, and then I have a master's in African American Studies. And I study operas written by Black composers. So a lot of my research is very focused on the fact that Black opera is a very communal space. It's sort of a community project. And I focus a lot on the role of audiences at Black opera performances. So when I saw this position pop up, I was like, for audience development, which is sort of has the intent of trying to make sure if we're going to be telling more diverse stories like those of Layla Starr, which takes place in Mumbai, and that of Florence Price, which is what My Name is Florence is about, who is the first Black woman composer to have a symphony performed at a major US orchestra. We're going to be telling those stories that audiences should also be reflected in the seats and in our ticket sales. So trying to embrace diverse audiences that have historically been excluded from the opera and make opera a more welcoming place for everyone.
Yeah, of course. And you're always welcome here every season. Reach back out to us. You know where to find us. What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite opera?
Ooh, let's see. One of my favorite operas is probably X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X
Oh,
by Anthony,
wow.
which is incredible. I saw it when it was at the Met in 2000, was that December 2023, but it premiered in the 80s, and it was definitely a long-awaited debut at the Met. So, and that's just an incredible opera. So for black opera, that's probably my favorite. For thinking canonical, my first opera was Verdi's Macbeth, and so that always has a little bit of a place in my heart. If you want the drama, Macbeth is a crazy first opera to have, and I really couldn't have been happier with that choice.
Right. Wasn't Verdi kind of like almost like a pop guy? I mean, wasn't his stuff very popular in his time, or am I imagining that?
No, he was definitely popular. It's not one of those, artistic stories where they died penniless and knew it. Artist, no. Beloved at the time. So, yeah.
I always love, because of course I mentioned in the green room, I do this other podcast called Art of Darkness, artofdarkpod.com, and we do biographical profiles of dead artists. And I always like covering an artist who gets theirs in their lifetime. That's always, it always makes me happy because we know for a fact it so often does not. Eric, are you a would you consider yourself an opera aficionado, or are you sort of getting exposed to it now? What's the story?
I love Pavarotti. I'm just kidding. No, so who doesn't know? Yeah, who
Love
doesn't know Pavarotti?
the pop.
Exactly. Yep. So I'm actually taken aback about this Malcolm X opera. And my first opera experience is after meeting Dr. Allison Lewis, which so kindly invited me out to go to what is it, Pella? How do you say it?
Pagliacci.
Pagliacci,
Yeah.
yes.
Which means
And which was, yes, it was amazing. But I'm a huge Malcolm X fan, which most of my exposure and learning about Malcolm X was actually from the Spike Lee film in the 90s. And then from the film, I did, the deep dive into his life. So right away, when you mentioned there's an opera about this, I have to see it. And I do have a question. Is there swing dancing in this opera?
Oh yeah, there's a whole really wonderful scene with when they have the zoot suits. Like another
Yes.
thing about that is the opera came out before the movie, which also happened to Anthony Davis again when he did the opera Amistad, which we know Spielberg did the movie later after the opera again. He also did Central Park 5, the opera, which of course we all sort of hopefully are familiar with that case. So Anthony Davis has always been, will always be. That like that
Nice. Very
incredible.
cool. Opera, I always say it's just one of the most reliable live performance tickets. It's always a spectacle. I mean, not always, but I mean, you can generally expect a spectacle. And whether it's a canonical or something new, the form itself just lends itself so well to drama and just the bigness of it and the unapologetic quality of it. I just really admire. I should see more opera. I'm going to see more opera. I'm going to come to this Layla Starr show. I'm going to read your copy about it. Is that all right?
Please do.
All right. The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, Reincarnated Resolute Revolutionary. When the goddess of death is cast down to earth to live as a mortal named Layla Starr, the boundaries between the divine and the human begin to blur in this vivid, transporting world premiere from Kamala Sankaram and Manita Gandhi. The Many Deaths of Layla Starr was commissioned and developed through Minnesota Opera's New Works Initiative. Love it. Love that. Adapted from the acclaimed graphic novel by Ram V and Philippe Andrade. Infused with elements of Konakoi, Raga, is that right? And EDM, love that. This fantasy on purpose and impermanence unfolds with both kinetic energy and striking clarity as a god made mortal begins to see the world and life itself through fresh eyes. Sung in English with English captions projected above the stage. That was a cold reading. How'd I do? Are we going to make it?
Yes.
Okay. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. I have young kids. It's going to be hard for me to get to the gala. I'm going to have to be at home handing out candy and stuff, but I'll definitely come to one of these performances.
And bring kids. This is,
Okay. It's a little tough. Our oldest is autistic. So it's a little tough to go out to this kind of thing. But I'll think about it. Maybe I'll bring my middle daughter. She's just, but then she wouldn't shut up during the performance. You can't win. It was very, very hard at the Bell Museum. We got through it though. I love my kids. So I'd love to hear about this. Maybe Dr. Lewis, can you tell me about the genesis of this? How did this come to be? And how are you and Eric partnering to bring audiences? I mean, short of going on the best radio show in St. Paul, how are you how are you partnering to promote the performances of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is an opera that, like you said, is coming out of our New Works Initiative, which is a long-term investment in new works and new sort of upcoming composers and librettists. Often, especially with composers and librettists of color, they can often sort of have sort of one shot at doing an opera. And if it doesn't do the way that it goes, they're sort of left behind. This is sort of a new model that we've developed at Minnesota Opera, in which case we have more of a cohort. So we have three librettists and three composers. And over 7 years, which is, again, a rather long-term investment for an opera company to be making, the librettists and composers take turns working with each other so that they each leave having produced a song cycle, a chamber opera, which is just a smaller, more intimate opera, and a main stage opera at the Ordway. So this is one of these pieces that has come out of that that program. So we're really excited, and because this is our second main stage opera, again, the first being My Name is Florence back in February. So yeah, this is a really exciting piece. And because it's based off of a graphic novel, those of us in Impact who do civic engagement have had plenty to do, because it's a great book that we can sort of go out and meet kind of middle school plus aged students and engage with people that might not always feel like opera is for them, that this is, you know, maybe something for older audiences. But this is a great piece because it's so clearly supposed to be more expansive of who this is for. So yeah, we're really excited. And Eric has been so wonderful to work with. How did we get connected, Eric? Do you remember?
I don't know. I think the all giving good God in Many Deaths of Layla Starr somehow reached out from the comic book universe into our universe. I don't know, but we somehow got connected. I know one of the things that Dr. Allison pointed out was out of the comic shops. I guess Mind's Eye rises to the top when it comes to community engagement. A lot of the work that I do, you know, coming back to the whole connecting the dots and everything. The Minnesota Opera with Mind's Eye Comics couldn't be a better fit. And, you know, just completely unbiased, like seriously, with what I've been trying to do with this business, because there's tons of just community engagement and advocating for literacy, like projects that I like to work on, going to speak at schools. I fostered a graphic novel course at a high school. And then when it came down to this graphic novel in particular, there's a lot of awareness that I like to bring about representation, not only on the page, But from behind the page, this is all, a diverse team that actually produced this work. And it's really amazing. And as I always say, in mind's eye, spark your imagination, right? So anyone that reads The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, which is published by Boom Studios, written by Ram V, you'll be introduced to a whole new world of like approaches on deities and a lot of drama about what takes place and what's about to shift for humanity. It's a really great story. I'm trying not to spoil this book that everybody should go and read, and everybody should go and see the opera. You should read it and you should go see the opera. Dr. Lewis, I don't know if I'm able to say and mention like the collaborative project to promote it. Okay, so plan to promote the opera with an offstage event here at the store. It's a visual arts project, a contest of sorts. So people will come in and they'll get to learn about visual storytelling, which is actually something that I teach here. We teach visual storytelling, creative writing, and we have your create your own comic book day, so it worked perfect. So they'll come in and we'll do a visual storytelling project or art contest that ties into this opera to help promote the many deaths of Layla Starr. So in the Minnesota
Great.
Opera,
I
which
love
is
it.
I have to commend for taking on this project. It's great.
That is fascinating. And the sort of I love new works development. I mean, I was at the Playwright Center for a year that changed my life. I really, really admire that. I think I love, again, doing my wacky show about dead artists, right? But it's we have a book club and we're starting to include more and more living writers. It's like su let's support the living, right? The dead, I think God's got them or something, right? Like they don't need our support so much, so I really admire that. And I had no idea that the Minnesota Opera had a program like that. So that's very encouraging. And then of course these community connections are just fantastic. And Eric, I'm definitely going to visit your store. What's your favorite comic? What's your favorite comic book, Eric?
My favorite comic?
Yeah, I gotta ask.
Oh my gosh. So, I get the question, favorite comics, favorite heroes, and I would say it's a different thing
Who's your
in a
favorite child?
different time in my life. Say that again. What was that?
Who's your favorite child? You might as well just answer that.
Right, of course. Of course. Yeah. I
Oh,
mean,
well,
it's I know it's a bit of a hack question, but I'm being a little bit cheeky. I also want to know. I mean, if you are a comic book guy, the comic book guy in St. Paul, right? So, I got to ask. Again, I know it's a hack question, but I really
I
love
would say
asking.
like this. I always tend to gravitate to the self-sacrificing characters. And so in no particular order, it's going to be like Superman. Out of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's going to be Raphael.
Let's go.
Just so anytime you go down the list, I noticed as an adult now looking at the characters that I always fall in love with, Naruto, just to throw in a little manga, right? The self-sacrificing characters that says, you know what? There is a purpose bigger than myself, and I'm going to lend myself to bettering a larger community around myself. And I think that's part of where I've come from, and how I came up, and I just want to make sure that everybody can see the magic and the wonderment in life. And so being able to provide a space where young people can find their independence and explore and spark their imagination, where adults can come and find things that are new or share and make new memories with their loved ones, young people in their lives. It's always great when you see grandparents with their grandchildren and parents with their children, or just whomever with their person in this space. And it's just an opportunity to discover something new. Because I love all comic shops. I am a comic guy. There isn't a comic shop in the Twin Cities that I don't know or that I haven't shopped at. But I will say this, Mind's Eye does lend itself to all your independent titles and independent works. Because we all love Marvel, we all love DC. Tons of wonderful stories come out of there. But in the 90s, once I discovered that you could tell new stories and different characters, it was a wonderful discovery for me, and I just want to share that.
Fantastic. And of course, being a small business owner is no small feat. So I'm glad that you're able to make it work over there. What a great neighborhood. They're so lucky to have you. I'm gonna stop by. I'll come by and shake your hand and maybe pick something up. Dr. Lewis, do you have any strong feelings about comic books? Any favorites? Gotta ask.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I might not be a huge comic book person, but my sister's actually an illustrator out in Oakland, and so she actually does comic books. She does based on Star Wars, and that's Aubrey Lewis art, in case you're curious. Let me plug my sister, I guess, but she's incredible. And then, but she learned that from my father, and just sort of, I guess, bouncing off of what Eric was saying about that sort of generational love for comics that's so strong in my own family. And Eric really did a lot to make some dreams of my own family come true almost. My father, when he was 18, he was actually drafted for Vietnam. He grew up in Chicago. But when he left, the war ended, so he didn't actually go. So he was right on the cusp. But when he left for basic training and came back, his mother had actually thrown away all of his comic books. You know, like 19, what, 50s, 60s. It's really brutal. And when I told Eric this, I was like, I just wish I could find something, just like at least maybe like one or two of these comic books for my dad for Father's Day this year. And he gives me a call. What was that? Maybe a couple of days later, he's like, you should come back to the shop. And so I did, and he essentially let me steal from him, like at least the original Spider-Man comic books from that era. And I was able to give that to my dad, and I don't think I've ever seen him happy cry in my entire life. So yeah, it's a really Mind's Eye is a really special place, and Eric has really built something so beautiful, and is such a love letter to the Twin Cities area. So we're really, really excited to be working with him on this project.
What a moving story, Eric. That's so wonderful. I'm having floods of memories and things. I used to love the old Donald Duck comics, and I had the old timey ones where the pages were half yellow. No idea where those were. I had a collection of Magic the Gathering cards that would probably be worth upwards of six figures if those had not vanished. I played that way too early, put that away. In any event, I really, really like, I'm a weirdo. I really like Preacher, Eric, and I really like The Invisibles. I don't know if you're familiar with The Invisibles. I assume you are.
Those are great titles.
I have the entire Invisibles, the big book, and it's almost impossible to read. I got it. Very, very trippy reading The Invisibles. That would make quite an opera. Eric, let me learn more about your background. So when did you first fall in love with comic books? And how long have you been doing this line of business?
I first fell in love with comics at a very early age. My older brothers had comic books that I was never allowed. I was forbade from touching them. They actually would put up a Michael Jackson Thriller poster with him with the zombies on the wall on the steps leading to their room. And my younger brother and I would like close our eyes, just try to make it to the top of the steps, which felt like forever, just to get to the comics. And just when we thought we were at the top, we opened our eyes and there was Michael and the zombies, the scene from Thriller, and we just go tumbling back down the stairs. So it started there wanting the comics, and I wanted to illustrate them, I wanted to write them. It was just something that was magical to me about those panels, just being in there and immersing myself in the story. And it just something I gravitated to. It just stuck to me. And I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to make films and be an action martial artist star and own a comic book store and own my own comics. Well, fast forward in time, you know, getting a job in a movie theater, that was going to be my way into the movies. And getting jobs at graphic companies, that was going to be somehow my way into getting art credibility to, you know, doing comics, and then going to college for animation and computer animation, somehow culminated into just me being a comic fan, shopping at comic stores, and building a relationship with one of my favorite shops, which was Mind's Eye. It was originally established in 98, and I acquired it in 2018 after it had closed. Oh. So the owner, owner, Andrew Troth, is a producer and director of local performing arts companies. You might have heard of the Chameleon. He was involved in that.
Sure.
And it was always his plan, 20 years, close the store and get back on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Which he did right away. He was in a performance at the Gremlin Theater right away. So I actually asked him, I said, why not try to sell the shop? He's like, oh, no, I don't want to deal with investors or anyone. He says, Eric, but if you're asking for yourself, he's like, I like you. I know you. I believe your heart's in the right spot. You probably have no desire to even change the name. He said, no. Mind's Eye needs to be here because I like the way it presents. It was the first comic shop that I walked in that I was very proud to bring friends and family to say, see, this is what comic books, this is what this is, right? It's a bookstore, you know? And anyway, so from that's where the conversation started. And I told him that I had things that I wanted to do, which I said I wanted to make it future forward. E-commerce, social media, online presence. And I wanted to make sure that I was a community engagement, like a vessel to engage the community. Because prior to that, he didn't necessarily have any interest in going to comic cons or hosting events and those type of things. It was just no different than any other reputable bookstore, but just focused on comics. And then last but not least, education partnerships. I wanted to advocate for literacy as my teachers that discovered I love comics in the third and fourth grade, they would use Miss Devani. She would spend her own money to encourage me in school. And so I knew that this was very important to me. And help pull me through. You know, I'm a very creative, artistic-minded person that was focused on arts. And she thought, how do I engage this student? And she found a way. And so I just wanted to share that same type of love with up-and-coming generations. And it meant a lot when I actually had some young students, the stories that I get. I had a few students write me a letter telling me the impact, and they're grateful for the friendship that they and the bond that they have with their parents or their guardian that was forged over comic books, or the mothers that would come in and say, I've been working so hard to try to get my child to read, and now they won't go to bed. Like, I can't get them to stop reading. And so, you know, when I hear those stories, it's like, okay, it worked. This does matter. This does add a positive value to all of us, because you don't know right. How that's going to impact all of us in the future.
Of course. And it counts. It counts as reading. Yeah. And most people aren't going to stop at comic books. They'll have a lifelong love of comic books, but it might be the bridge into now they're reading Moby Dick, or Gatsby. Or they're going to the opera. Allison.
I carry all those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I carry all those adapted into graphic novels. So
Amazing.
people come in and you can get Great Gatsby. You can get like Nelson Mandela's biography, Frederick Douglass. Like I carry a lot of nonfiction. Or The Giver. They teach that in the seventh and eighth grade. And I have them all adapted into graphic novels. So a student can actually follow along with confidence with the class in maybe a way that works better for them.
Yes. Go
And
on.
if I could just add as well, Eric, it was when I first met Eric, his passion for like really reaching students and trying to find that spark was something that really made us want to us at Minnesota Opera partner with Mind's Eye, because a lot of the work that we're trying to do with our civic engagement is so aligned with that idea. This event that we're doing collaboratively on September 19th, like Eric said, is a cover contest, sort of because Layla Starr has multiple covers within that book. So essentially, this is going to be a sort of like launch party for that cover contest. If you win the contest, which there might be multiple winners, you will receive tickets to go see the opera, and we'll have your art actually displayed in the lobby of the performances, which will be really, really exciting. And on September 19th, what we're going to be doing is having Shishir Bamakanti, who is a local South Asian illustrator and comic book artist himself, is going to be teaching sort of a workshop on how to start thinking about how to get from that original idea, that spark, that connection, and getting it onto a blank page. Just like a composer who's looking at that blank page, where do I start? Just how do you get ideas onto the paper? Because you never know where those are going to actually take you. You can start with one idea, like Ram V did, right, with his graphic novel, and now we have this massive investment in this giant spectacle of an opera. You just don't know what's going to happen when you get that initial spark.
You
And
have.
Eric's passion for that was something we just had to connect with.
Yeah, fantastic. You just have to start. You just have to start. It's so great. We have opera. I like to think I represent theater and the playwrights. And then, of course, Eric is comic books and graphic novels, let's call them. And what a wonderful little trinity, little group we have together here. It's really unique and fascinating, and it has me meditating on the performative quality of comic books and comic book spaces, and how all three of these things we're talking about, of course, opera and theater are kind of indistinguishable, right? Or they're cousins, they're siblings, let's say. And and I want to ask you kind of a cheeky little question. I will in a minute. Comic book stores, they're an invitation to imagine, aren't they, Eric? Would you say that? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And
Comic
performance is
book
the same way.
stores,
Yeah, go on.
it's totally an invitation to imagine. I say that, that's one of the things I say most frequently. It's a space where it cultivates and nurtures imagination. Albert Einstein says, imagination is the mother of all things. And we don't have enough places and spaces that allow us to be safe and comfortable to just engage in what could be. And comic book
Absolutely.
shops
Yes.
lend itself to
It,
that.
these things let us imagine different futures, and they let us find, rediscover our inner child. And so many, so, and theater does that, and opera does that. You have to surrender your imagination, or else you're not going to have a good, very good time. And so it's fun to watch adults play make believe. I think comic books allow some of that too. And I mean that in the best way. So yeah, I just think it's great, and I love how mission oriented you are, right? Like, we haven't talked about finances once. And I know that's a big deal as a small business owner and as a not for profit, right? And of course, we're talking about mnopera.org, and we're talking about mindseyecomics.com. Again, mnopera.org and mindseyecomics.com. Again, if you're in the Twin Cities, or if you know someone who has something going on in the theater arts or culture, email us badmouthtc@gmail.com. These interviews are painless, aren't they? They're not even an hour.
Amazing.
So Easygoing, easygoing. So, Dr. Lewis, let me ask you. I'm working on a musical with a friend of mine, and she's in London. She's a Kiwi. We've written a lot of things together. It's just screenplays and things. Nothing that's been produced, really. But she's one of my very best friends. She's making a feature film right now. She was my co-host on Art of Darkness last season, but she left that to go work on her movies. That's her real passion. Not podcasting is not her passion. She sort of saved me when I needed a co-host, but she did a great job. Covered Coco Chanel, Murata Mita, this New Zealand woman director, just fascinating. Anyway, what's the difference between a musical and an opera?
It kind of depends who you're talking to, I guess. For me, it's kind of just defined by what the composer calls it, right? If the composer really says that it's a musical, I tend to believe them. If the composer says it's an opera, I tend to believe them. I what I because there's plenty of musicals where there's basically no talking at all, right? West Side Story, Hamilton. There's no speaking, there's no monologues, which is typically what people think of for a musical, is that it's a play with music, whereas in opera, there is no speaking at all. You need to be singing basically the entire time. However, I would not call those hard and fast rules. These are genres that can actually be surprisingly malleable. Per who they're coming from. And there's many different traditions of opera, from Chinese opera to Black US opera. And so how those function within different cultures, times, and spaces is extremely different. So I don't like to have very strict, this is what defines a musical and this is what defines an opera. I like to be a little bit more loosey-goosey with that and advocate for the artists and what they think their work is.
Sure, porous. It's genre, right? What's a comic? What's a graphic novel, right? Where,
Exactly.
I guess Gatsby would be a graphic novel. Gotta have Gatsby in St. Paul, Eric.
Yep.
So
So I,
that's
when you were saying what's a comic, what's a graphic novel, I tend to tell people like a single issue comic, which can be a one shot, it can be all inclusive a story, is typically like an episode of a season, and then the trade paperback is like binge watching a season. And then a graphic novel is from cover to cover, a solid narrative. It's like it's a movie, from start to finish.
Got it. Got it. Okay, very good. You two have me looking up my favorite opera on vinyl, and it's $80 because it's a three volume set, and it is Philip Glass's Akhenaten. I
A classic.
love that opera. It is staggeringly good. And it's sort of Philip Glass's doo 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 doo, but it's not. It's more mellow than maybe some of the other stuff, which can really actually be in your face. I saw him at a Whole Foods in New York City at one point. I
The
did
New York.
not go. He was shopping for avocados like everybody else, right? But I did not pester him. I wanted to be that guy to go up and go, "Oh God, how can I? It's so good." He just want he doesn't want to hear that. But what a
I definitely
genius.
with Spike Max when I was there at the Met. I was, keep it together.
Those sort of celebrity bump-ins are can be pretty heavy. And then more often than not, you don't want to meet your heroes, right? Just let them stay at a distance, let the work speak. And but if the Minnesota Opera ever does Akhenaten, I'll be there in a tuxedo.
I can't say that I was that polite. I was that guy. Ran into Ernie Hudson, which portrays
Oh,
Winston Zeddemore in the
yes.
Ghostbusters, and has
Yes.
lived in Minnesota in Burnsville for about 45 years. I mean, he also has a property in LA. But yeah, so he was getting his haircut, and I was out promoting my store. And I see him in the chair. We made eye contact. And he gave me that look like, okay, this person knows who I am. Is he actually going to come over here and disturb me while I'm getting my haircut? And I couldn't walk away. I was like, I gotta tell him that, hey, I'm so excited to meet you. And two, I have a comic book store at that time in your hometown, in your neighborhood, you know, because it was that store, my store was in Burnsville at that time. And he was a resident of Burnsville. And I was like, dude, you know, Minnesota's first black-owned comic shop retailer. Like,
Yeah.
hi, I love you and the
Of
Ghostbusters. I love the
course.
Ghostbusters.
I love
It
that
meant a lot
movie.
to me.
It's one of
And
my
so,
top
but
five movies.
yeah.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so yeah, I was that guy. And then I really felt terrible though, because the barber then, after you know, shaking hands and meeting him, and I leave, and I kind of look back like, wow, that really happened. And then the barber's turning his chair around, so he has to face the back wall of the barber shop. I was like, I am so sorry. So, Ernie, Mr. Hudson, I apologize. I am sorry. It was all love.
I have a meeting a Ghostbusters person story as well. So I was
Ooh.
blessed to have the great David Margulis, before he passed away, read one of my plays in New York City. And of course, he's the lawyer in The Sopranos, and he was the mayor in Ghostbusters. And over lunch, we went and grabbed sushi, and I said, listen, David, I have to do this. Lenny, you will have saved the lives of millions of registered voters. And he looked at me like, ugh. But he did a great, great job at the reading. He was very ill, and he passed away not long after, and I was so blessed. He's probably the most famous person who's ever read one of my plays, and I was just so fortunate to
That's
have
what.
that. A place called Dream of Perfect Sleep. You never know where theater will take you and who you're gonna meet. But boy, I love the Ghostbusters. I think it's one of the reasons that I moved to New York City. It's one of my earliest memories is getting just scared to death by, you know, that film. That film works on so many different levels. Bill Murray just steals the entire movie, but everybody's so good in it. And it's just wonderful. I might even slap that on tonight. When I first moved to New York City, I went and I hung out at the library, right? My uncle thought he was Saint Jerome, you know. Back off, man. I'm a scientist. I love it. It's so quotable. It's so funny. Just a classic. So that is a cool story, and I hope you don't mind that I got to share my little Ghostbuster story as well. We got a fraction of the cast between the two of us. Dr. Lewis, have you met a Ghostbuster? Who you gonna call?
I just personally, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. It's all good. So one more time, can I get dates of what's coming up? So you mentioned, I think, something on September 19th. Where can people find that information for the event?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead and keep checking our socials at Minnesota Opera, mnopera.org. We're going to have information. This is going to be a registered event because supplies are going to be limited. We're going to be providing all the resources that you need, pencils, paper, all those things to be able to participate. So we're going to have a registration so that we know how much to get for everyone. Registration, I think, is going to open September 1st. And again, if you follow us on Instagram, anywhere like that, when that registration opens on September 1st, you'll be able to find links to it through there or on the website. And if you have any other questions, you can always feel free to email me as well at alewis@mnopera.org for any other questions.
A. Lewis, go on.
Sorry, alewis at mnopera.org. Or you can also see me at or run into me at the Black Garnet Bookstore, where Minnesota Opera actually does a collaboration with them on opera and, on music and liberation as a book club that I host. We're meeting this Sunday, and we're going to be covering Singing Like Germans, black singers in the land of Bach, Brahms, and Beethoven. So feel free to see me there. I'm happy to answer any questions or shoot me an email.
Every time Bach comes up, I think about whatever you feel about David Mamet, put it aside. He said in one of his books that Bach was the greatest to ever do it because he committed so few spiritual crimes. And that's such a fascinating quote for me, because as a playwright, I do every play I write, I start to feel a little dirty, like I may be doing like this, but I tend to write weird transgressive plays, right? My new play, I wrote 47 pages in 3 days. My new play is set in a dump. It's set in a landfill. So yeah, I'm feeling a little grimy writing the play. It's based on a true story. This guy in Wales lost a hard drive with $800 million worth of Bitcoin on it. Back when it was worthless, it ended up in a landfill, and he's been going through the dump every weekend for like years looking for this hard drive that he chucked. And so I
This
just
stuff
took that.
playing.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a pair of siblings. Their father's dying. They share a father in common, but they have different mothers. And it's just about sibling rivalry and memory, and for finding the things you've forgotten. So yeah. Anyway, I'm not trying to promote myself. It's just I'm working on it right now, so it's on the top of my mind. Your story, Dr. Lewis, about the comic books that got thrown away. That's like straight out of what's happening in my play. They finally find the stash of the stuff from the home, and a bunch of stuff that's been thrown out that maybe shouldn't have been, So anyway, yeah, I hope everybody has hung on to their Bitcoin. Okay. This guy in Wales apparently wants to buy the entire landfill because he knows it's in there somewhere. Can you even imagine? In any event. So again, I want to promote Mind's Eye Comics. Eric, what else do you have coming up? And we've just got maybe 3 or 4 more minutes, and we'll wind down, do a final round of plugs, and get out of here and go and enjoy the rest of our evenings. Maybe watch Ghostbusters. Eric, what else is going on at your store?
We have the event with MN Opera promoting Many Deaths of Layla Starr. There's also the, I'm sorry, I should have had it right here in front of
Oh, that's all
me.
right. That's all right. I can vamp. MindsEyeComics.com in Prospect Park. Beautiful Prospect Park. Go make a day of it. Go get some Thai food. Okay. Park. Go get some Thai food. Go to the library. Beautiful library. I dream of having a house in Prospect Park one day. It's possible that we could end up over there if everything goes. If I find the lost Bitcoin, we'll certainly move to Prospect Park. I have to go find the lost Bitcoin. What else is going on,
Okay, got it
Eric?
here.
Yeah,
We
cool.
got the first Midwest Black Book Fair coming up this month. Mind's Eye Comics will be vending there. It is on August 22nd, I believe. So I just want to make sure that is
Let me
the
look it up
actual
here.
date. If you go to MidwestBlackBookFair.com. Yep,
Yep, it's
August
the
22nd.
22nd.
Mind's
Yep.
Eye Comics. Yep. So Mind's Eye will be there. Folks should go and check that.
Great. These are all people I want to talk to, by the way. BadmouthTC@gmail.com. Again, I think these interviews are painless. I think they're fun. They go fast. We have a good time. I love learning about new places. I love learning about what's going on in the Twin Cities. I'm so grateful to the both of you for your time, for your enthusiasm, for your passion, for your respective art forms, for the unique collaboration. Comic books and opera, they're maybe about as far apart as you might think. But of course, we know better, don't we? We know better. Dr. Lewis, tell me again about the season, what's coming up, mnopera.org. And of course, again, Mind's Eye. I want to get it right. What is it, Eric? I got it in front of me. Mind's Eye
Mind's Eye Comics.
Comics.com. Okay. Dr. Lewis, take us out. What's coming up at the opera? Of course, this is the Layla Starr piece is premiering on Halloween.
Exactly. The Many Deaths of Layla Starr is going to be premiering. The world premiere is going to be on October 31st. So please attend. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be such a spectacular. And then our winter opera is going to be Ariadante by Handel. We're going to do a reprise performance of My Name is Florence, which premiered last year. That's going to be in January for one night only at the Ordway in the concert hall. So make sure you get your tickets for that. And we're going to be finishing the season in the spring with Verdi's Falstaff. So it's going to be a full season. And look for the community engagement that's also happening around these events, including our event at Mind's Eye Comics on September 19th, which is a free art workshop again with Sashir Bomakanti, local incredible illustrator. Please look him up as well. He's developed an incredible workshop. So if you're interested in getting free tickets, having your art displayed at the premiere of Layla Star, this is an incredible, the really, really incredible community event for you to attend.
Thank you both. This has been a pleasure. I'm Kevin Kautzman. Maybe you're listening on 94.1 Frogtown Radio or wherever you hear your podcasts. We're Badmouth Theater Company, badmouthtc@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you if you have something going on. Thank you both. Have a good evening.
Thank
Are you
you.
going to call?
Thank you. I appreciate it.